It's one of the most common causes of passenger fatalities, and it just keeps happening. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for the download today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We're here to talk safety issues. Bob, thanks for taking some time out today.
Well, as always, Paul, it's my pleasure.
One of the things, Bob, that would make any statistician scratch his head if he looked at general aviation was the idea that one of the only unrecoverable things you can do in an airplane is get into a low-speed stall spin close to the ground. And yet, we see it over and over and over, and it accounts for a tremendous percentage of the fatal accidents we see in general aviation. You have noticed this and wrote about it in the July issue of Over the Airwaves.
This I headlined it "Senseless Deaths," and I guess I just tried to find the reason for this problem. We suffer one fatal stall spin accident in the United States a week. That's 50, over 50 a year. And I guess I have to go back to, if the student doesn't learn, it's because the teacher didn't teach. That's the only thing I can think of as to why this is continuing to happen. And I can trace it back to, again, every time I ask the same question on a flight review that I do, I'll have an individual in the pattern, and I know they're a little bit rusty on the rules, and that's why we do flight reviews. But certain rules, you know, you expect even the most basic aviator to understand. And the question is, George, tell me the stall speed of this airplane. And they'll say, oh, it's 40 knots in a Cessna 172. I said, yeah, but in this turn to final, what's the stall speed? And he says, well, it's 40 knots. See, it's right here on the airspeed indicator, you know. And I says, yeah, but we're now in a 60-degree bank, George. What's the stall speed? And I don't get anything close to the right answer. And of course, you know, knowledgeable aviators know that as the bank angle increases, the G loading on the airplane increases. As that increases, the stall speed increases, or rather dramatically. And so we have this hapless pilot. He's rolling into a, should be maybe a 30 degree bank, but he gets it over to 45 degrees and maybe even to 60 degrees. And he's losing a little bit of altitude because of the steep bank angle, so he horses it back on the yoke or the stick, and voila, we have the stall. We have a bit of a yaw cranked in, and the airplane rolls over on its back, and it's into the ground. Simple as that. And we ask ourselves, why does this continue to happen time after time after time? I think one of the reasons is if you look at a number of students being prepared for the practical test standards and you ask them to demonstrate a stall, many students get away with just a, you know, a light burble on the wings and call it a stall, and they'll immediately institute a recovery, or they'll hear the stall horn begin to chirp and they'll instantly make a stall recovery. The practical test standards for a private pilot calls for a full stall, brake, recovery. It's not being tested, it's not being taught, it's not being performed. Therefore, the student has no clue as to what a full stall feels like.
Well, do you think we should be back to the days, too, Bob, when people actually experience a spin as part of the requirement, part of the PTS for the private certificate?
I used to think that, Paul, but now I'm fearful that if we instituted that rule right now, conservatively, 75% of the flight instructors out there would kill themselves in the process, because they themselves have never been through they went through some sort of an obligatory spin exercise as part of their CFI training maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, and that may have been just a simple one or two turn spin. I think, frankly, the stockpile of instructors, and I know I'm indicting my friends as I say this, but I'm not real confident that the vast majority of today's flight instructors could teach a spin. Not to mention the fact that there's not a whole lot of airplanes out there that are certified for spins. So now what do? We're going to have to start looking for, airplanes that some of the older tail draggers, Roncas, and some of our newer flight instructors have only been in metal airplanes, and so we have to put them into these airplanes, and they're going to hurt themselves for the first time trying to land a tailwheel. So what we've created through our lack of attention to change are three generations of pilots that are grossly not up to the task of teaching the way our students today need to be taught. And I'm including myself in that category. I was taught by individuals that were taught by individuals who, you know, slipped through the system.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way I resolved the problem with myself is I went down to a group called Fighter Combat International. I spent short of a week with those guys down in Mesa, Arizona, and an extra 300. And I learned how to do spins and stalls and aerobatics. In fact, I think every self-respecting CFI who's out there teaching should, on his own or her own, go avail themselves to a rigorous course in aerobatics and develop the skills necessary to properly teach stalls and spins.
Well, it's. I was going to get around to that, Bob. I was going to ask you, rather than pointing out what's wrong with the industry, and we kind of know where that's going, what can an individual do? And I think you've answered that. If I want as a private pilot to get that kind of instruction, I know a couple places I can go where somebody will take me up in a Citabria and turn me upside down and spin me and do all these things and make sure that I know what the recovery is.
Yes, and that we need to do. We've had the FAA out to our flight school here for the last couple of weeks. We're right in the throes of wrapping up our Part 141 application to become an FAA-approved flight school. And one of the things the Rochester FISDO does, to their credit, is they have this bullseye diagram, which shows that the center bullseye is the FAA minimum requirements. And then the vast majority of the rest of the target are higher standards. And they themselves at the FISDO acknowledge that the minimum standards of performance, whether it's to become an FAA 141 flight school or to pass a check ride, are bare minimums. It's like a D minus in a high school or college level course. That's a D minus. Now, any self-respecting high school student that wants to get into a good college or a college student wants to get into a good graduate program cannot do that by coming out with a D minus average on his courses. He's got to get certainly a B plus, A minus, or even an A. In our world as CFIs, if we're going to adhere to Part 61, the minimum requirements to become a CFI, then we're accepting a D-minus level of proficiency. And to get to that B and A, we have to take it upon ourselves to go out there and get that higher standard of qualification. And as I say this, I know our listeners are saying, Bob, it's expensive enough to learn how to fly. It costs a fortune. Yes, it does, but it costs a fortune to become a surgeon or a dentist. Or a good lawyer. Any profession costs a fortune. If we're going to go out there and do what's right, then we're going to have to go above the minimum standard.
More on one of the most common and preventable causes of general aviation fatalities in a moment. My guest is Bob Miller. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. All right, now we've talked about learning to recover from stalls and spins, but Bob, the reality is if it happens to you turning base to final, you're just not high enough.
Ah, Bruce Landsberg, AOPA Air Safety Foundation. That's precisely his argument as I understand it.
Well, except that, Bob, I'm not using it to argue against the training. What I'm saying is that it's not going to be enough, that what we have to do is we have to make people aware that, in particular, your article was about the fact that it keeps happening with passengers. I think even people who may be marginally aware of the stall threshold of their airplane in a bank turn may not be thinking about the impact of having extra weight on board.
Well, Well, yes, but that doesn't compare nearly to the extra weight created by a 45 to 60 degree bank turn. A 60 degree bank turn doubles the weight of the entire aircraft. That's a load factor of 2 in a 60 degree bank. But where I thought you were going, Paul, is the data says most of the fatals occur, stall spins occur in the pattern. Therefore, why practice a maneuver recovery that's not recoverable if it occurs in the pattern? That is Bruce Landsberg's argument, and that's, he makes that vigorously in many of his writings. My retort to that is, if we understood what a stall spin feels like at a safe altitude, say over 4,000 feet in the air, we will develop what's called the somatographic, the feeling, our body sensations will begin to intuitively feel what an impending stall feels like. And therefore, we will not allow ourselves to get anywhere near that flight parameter in the pattern, which would precipitate or which would result in a stall. My first experience in an extra 300, a fully aerobatic airplane in a simple stall, was a mind-bending experience. I did it with an instructor pilot in the back seat. He just simply pull the power to idle, Bob, and let's stall the airplane. And when the bottom fell out of the airplane, quite literally, that symmetrical wing on both sides, I mean, it just stopped flying. There was no burble, no warning, nothing. And so I became very, very sensitized to how fast a stall or even a spin can occur by taking that training at a safe altitude. So when I'm in the pattern with my students, I won't let them make a turn anything slower than 70 knots. Now, I know that it's arguable from explaining the aerodynamics of a stall and stall speeds at any speed, but I know in my head that if I keep any of our training aircraft above 70 knots in the pattern, no matter how we bank that airplane, we can rock it over to almost 80 degrees. It isn't going to fall out from underneath us at that speed. It's a safe speed. But I developed that notion because I, you know, for one, have experienced the suddenness of a stall spin. And we don't do that on our own when we train to minimum standards.
Well, now, I guess if you do that, it's going to maybe take a slightly larger pattern. It may take some other adjustments if you're used to starting to reduce your speed to get set up for final approach, you know, from the moment you pull power on the downwind.
Well, 70 knots is not, I mean, we think of, you know, coming across the numbers in a Cessna 172 or a Piper Warrior at 60, 65. We're only talking about, 5 knots, 70. If I can keep my students above 70, it's a mantra that all of the students in our school hear. No turns under 70, no turns under 70. When we solo them, we can almost hear them on the microphone subconsciously saying, no turns under 70, no turn. We know with that we have a very good chance of keeping them out of a stall spin scenario. And that's what kills them in the pattern. And of course, that's everybody's worst nightmare, is we send a student up and they don't come down alive. Now, the other problem of getting them down without damaging the airplane, of course, that's another whole series of issues. But I want them all, of course, all pilots that I train, clearly goes without saying, we don't want them to suffer a fatal accident. So what we have to do is look at the data and look at what causes the accidents. And the number one of the worst maneuvering accidents is that stall spin, again, once a week in the United States. In the grand scheme of things, not a lot, you know, given the number of takeoff and landings. But nonetheless, in the number of total accidents, it rules very close to the worst one we have, and that's that continued VFR flight into IMC conditions.
Well, Bob, just for those who are flying a lot of different kinds of, a lot of different configurations and types of airplanes, let's go over very briefly what that formula is. It's the square root of the G load. So if you're in a 60 degree bank and you have 2 Gs, that comes out to 1.41.
Right.
So
time. Times the stall speed in the wings level configuration.
Right. So I guess if you have a stall speed of 40 knots in wings level configuration, a safe margin would be to just call it 1.5 and call it good.
Yeah, and you can work out the math. There was a fatal accident several years ago over at Oshkosh, and Oshkosh is coming up soon. It's worth looking at something like that. And I don't know if this was an official change in ATC procedures, but here we had an individual in a World War I. I don't know what it was, whether it was a Sopwith Camel, but it was an antique airplane. And I suspect it was flown by a couple of antique pilots. But he was turning base to final, and he lost it on the turn, stall, spin. And I could only imagine if these individuals were flying this airplane at the edge of stall in a turn, and the tower controller, you know, gives him an instruction to turn final with the instruction to rock his wings, he could have rocked himself right into a steep turn, stall, and spin.
Well, Bob, I think this is especially good to talk about with Oshkosh coming up in a couple of weeks here. And we, as always, appreciate your input. We'll look for you again next Monday.
Thanks, Bob. I'll talk to you soon.
My guest has been CFI Bob Miller. You can read the current edition of Over the Airwaves, subscribe to receive monthly notice of new issues, and find a link to Bob Miller flight training at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.